This episode of All About Jack is sponsored by Shelley & Son Books. You can find Shelley & Son Books online at shelleyandsonbooks.com. Welcome to a special edition of All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, the creator of the show, and also the author of C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters. And normally I'd be telling you that I'm also the host of this show, but that's actually not the case today. Instead, in a moment, Dr. Crystal Hurd will be taking over after I finish my opening announcer duties. That's because this is the first of a six-part series entitled Exploring C.S. Lewis Misquotes and Misconceptions. And that happens to be my specialty. So the tables are going to be turned today, and Crystal will be asking me about this topic. But first, to start things off, let me have Crystal share a little bit about herself, and then we'll have her share more at the end.
Hello, William. Thank you so much for having me on this important and special podcast on clearing up some of the misquotes and misconceptions about Lewis. In the past, I've written a couple different things. I have a devotional called 30 Days with C.S. Lewis, a women's devotional. And I also contributed a chapter to the book Women and C.S. Lewis on Flora Lewis, which was C.S. Lewis's mother. And I also serve as review editor for Zenzucht, the C.S. Lewis Journal. It's great to be here, William, and it's also great to be hosting all six shows.
Well, actually, Crystal, you're not hosting all six shows. I could only afford to pay you for the first show, so I got some other people to do the other ones with me for free.
Well, that's fine. Gummy bears are a great currency for me, but I'm so happy to be here for this first two-hour episode.
Well, Crystal, actually, because I'm working on a book version of my material, and presently a lot of the details are already online with my C.S. Lewis misquotes and misconceptions, we're keeping each show to, like, you know, 20 to 25-minute range. So, you know, I wonder maybe you talked to someone who misquoted me, and that's how you got your misconception.
Maybe. You know, there's so much stuff floating around on the internet these days that it's hard to tell fact from fiction, which is actually why we're doing this show today.
Exactly right. Well, more seriously, folks, Crystal and I hope you do enjoy today's show. And so she's going to set it up for me to talk about it. So take it away, Crystal.
All right. Well, since this is the debut show of Exploring C.S. Lewis Misquotes and Misconceptions, so we're basically doing an overview of the series today, which again is a total of six programs. So, William, for those who are not clear about what you mean by misquotes and misconceptions, why don't you clarify those words for us?
All right. Well, as we go along, I'll talk more specifically about the different types of misquotes. I kind of categorize, in addition to actual quotes from Lewis, three categories, one of which are quotes that are from him, but you don't want to isolate them. So misquotes can actually be, more misattributions is the main things. And then we're going to be talking about things that are kind of close to him where someone is paraphrasing him. So we're generically just kind of categorizing all things that are questionable or you want to question as misquotes. Then for the misconceptions, that material is going to be looking at misconceptions about either Lewis's life or about his writing. So that's obviously very different from a misquote, but I'm trying to combine this for a potential book here in the future and thought doing these six shows would help generate some more interest, which already so far with the things I've done, people seem to be interested.
Sounds great. So let's start then by having you tell about what you call not quotations, which are those that are clear-cut expressions credited to Lewis that he actually didn't write. In the next two shows, you plan to cover up to 10 of these, so let's briefly chat about at least some of them at first. So here's the first one. I pray because I can't help myself. I pray because I'm helpless. I pray because the need flows out of me all the time, waking and sleeping. It doesn't change God. It changes me. Now, how is this actually different from what Lewis really said?
All right. Well, of course, let me maybe address it this way, and that is there are a lot of reasons to pray, and sadly, most people only pray to ask God for things they want. The above quote clearly doesn't carry that perspective, so it's a great quote in and of itself. And, you know, at the end, it speaks about how, you know, prayer changes a person and not God. And this reminds me of the overlooked similar notion that prayer doesn't change things, but people, and that people change things. But now, this is not Lewis. Well, you might say it's Lewis, but it's what you would call the fictional C.S. Lewis, because in the movie Shadowlands, which Anthony Hopkins plays him in the Hollywood version, that character does say it, but that's what the scriptwriter decided to write in adapting some ideas from Lewis. We don't have anything specific that he said exactly similar. In the next show, where we're going to look at these in more detail, I'll give some quotes that deal with things that he did say about prayer, but there's nothing exactly similar that he said, but we know that it is in the movie Shadowlands. So, you know, this, you know, it's a reasonable quote, but just don't say that it's C.S. Lewis. It's a line from the movie Shadowlands.
Well, that's interesting, William. There are actually several quotes from the movie Shadowlands that have been erroneously attributed to Lewis. Can you tell us about those?
Well, yeah, I will and I won't. I'm going to make reference to my website, EssentialCSLewis.com, where at the time we're recording, at the very end of June 2017, I have 36 different quotes that are questionable. Not all of them are from the movie Shadowlands, but actually, as we're recording here at the end of June, I just gotten a question through a Facebook message, a direct message to me from Max McLean, and he was asking me about a Lewis quote that he knew was in the movie Shadowlands, but he wondered if Lewis actually said it. So there are a lot of different quotes out there. Some are from Shadowlands. Some are actually from the Narnia movies, the Hollywood version. And then some, we're not sure how and why they necessarily got attributed to Lewis. There are, like I say, over 30 articles on my website right now that people can read to learn more about that. But we're going to go ahead and, you know, skim across some more of them here. And, Crystal, you're going to go ahead and set up the next one.
All right. So how about this one? I've seen this one circulating on the Internet a little. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less.
Right. And obviously, this is a great quote. If a person lived by this, you know, thought, then, you know, every day they would be a very humble person, and it's a great quality. But just because it's a great quote doesn't have to mean it had to come from C.S. Lewis. In this case, it's, you know, the one we just noted, we have a knowledge of where it came from. There's some that I deal with on the website that we don't have any idea. This is another example of one we do know where else it is from. This actually comes from Rick Warren's book, The Purpose-Driven Life. A revised edition came out, but back in 2002, the original edition, it's found in Day 19 in a chapter called Cultivating Community. And this book has a lot of footnotes and a lot of citations. And while I personally suspect Warren was thinking of Lewis because of some quotes that we're not going to be sharing from Mere Christianity, that he, you know, he was possibly thinking about Lewis, he doesn't give reference to it. And since he gives reference to a lot of people's ideas and stuff where he's, you know, referring to them, it's, you know, maybe he had read Mere Christianity years ago and the thought stuck in his mind and he forgot where he had pulled it from. It's a great quote, but we know it is definitely not Lewis because it actually is in Rick Warren's book, The Purpose-Driven Life.
Well, that's really interesting because it seems like a lot of these misconceptions and misquotes come from people who misread or misinterpret things they've read. It's very interesting. Well, this next quote you should be pretty familiar with since you just published a book on the Screwtape Letters, but this one's a little bit lengthy. My dear Wormwood, be sure that the patient remains completely fixated on politics. Arguments, political gossip, and obsessing on the faults of people they have never met serves as an excellent distraction from advancing in personal virtue, character, and the things the patient can control. Make sure to keep the patient in a constant state of angst, frustration, and general disdain toward the rest of the human race in order to avoid any kind of charity or inner peace from further developing. Ensure that the patient continues to believe that the problem is out there in the broken system, rather than recognizing there is a problem within himself. Keep up the good work, Uncle Screwtape.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty convincing in some regard, but if you are one that has read the Screwtape Letters quite a bit, as I have, I immediately knew that it wasn't. So actually, the beginning part, my dear Wormwood, that is how Lewis starts each Screwtape Letter. However, the rest of it, while it may have some ideas that Lewis might agree with, there's others that he maybe wouldn't phrase it a certain way. That's kind of how you can kind of know things that are fake Lewis quotes, is if you're very familiar with his style of writing, than things that you read that's a little too contemporary. Now, we do have his letters that weren't, you know, meant to be published, that he does write more casually. There are some quotes that are quite humorous. It may seem like it's not Lewis, but that's a different topic altogether. But, yeah, so, you know, immediately I knew this wasn't a Screwtape letter from having read it so much. The ebook version of the Screwtape letters is out there, so I did a quick confirmation doing a search to confirm that it wasn't. And so it's interesting, you know, ideas there. On the website, I do have an article at EssentialCSLewis.com where I share some other things that Lewis said that were similar. Some is from the Screwtape letters. But for those who may be interested in the Screwtape letters, as Crystal reminded, I do have a book that is an enhanced study guide to the Screwtape letters. It's called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell. And I've done a short-term podcast series called 200 Seconds in Hell with C.S. Lewis, where I collect a few ideas from it to help remind you about all the great material that is in the Screwtape letters. Regardless of whether you get my book or listen to this other short-term podcast, read Lewis, especially the Screwtape letters and other of his books firsthand. It is very invaluable, and you can learn a lot.
Indeed. Now, the sentiment in that last quote, again, does resonate with a lot of people, but still not C.S. Lewis. So what about this one? Children are not a distraction from more important work. They are the most important work.
Well, you know what? This makes me think about distractions, and they're, well, very distracting, aren't they? But more seriously, you know, this quote sounds like, you know, hey, this, you know, Lewis would probably say that. After all, he was the author of the great children's series about Narnia. But you'd be surprised, and I'm not going to reveal it today. The website will have it. I might reference it when I actually do the show. That will be the third episode, I believe, that'll deal with this quote. But what Lewis's thoughts about children is a little bit surprising. But this is another example where we actually know who said this. Dr. John Traynor is an individual that I was able to contact through Facebook. And he confirmed, because I was looking around in doing the research, and I saw his name, and then I saw he was on Facebook, so I contacted him. And he confirmed to me that, and he showed me the documentation, that he was getting ready to, you know, within Facebook, you could do a group chat with friends. And now there's more elaborate things with video, but this is before they had all that. But he was having a group chat. He was preparing for that, and he came up with that expression, and he shared it with that group. This was in, like, the end of 2012, and so he showed me documentation for that. But somehow Lewis's name got associated with it. A lot of these quotes sometimes are anonymous, and then Lewis's name gets attached to it. Not too often, but we've already, you know, heard one that we were attributing to, or it's actually from Rick Warren, someone more well-known. But, yeah, this is not from Lewis. We know who it's from. It's a great quote, but just don't say it's from Lewis.
William, kudos to you for tracking that down and securing the source of the quote. But speaking of bad quotes, this one has made its rounds on the internet over and over again. Actually, this last fall, my husband graduated from graduate school, and the speaker at the ceremony used this quote in her speech, much to my chagrin. But here it is: you are never too old to set another goal or dream another dream.
This one is a little bit murkier. I didn't purposefully plan to pick out ones that we knew who they were. I just went through my list and saw how many people read the different ones, and a mix of the ones that were the most popularly read, and then others that I knew that were shared a lot, even if it wasn't read on my website. But this is one we actually know. That is, I haven't actually been in contact with this person, but I did track down that a motivational speaker by the name of Les Brown, he actually did this quote, and his website was updated a few years ago, and I found an earlier version where it basically was saying, here's a list of quotes by this person, and this quote was there. Other places I've seen it as listed as anonymous, but I did track down a video that was on YouTube, and I have a link that is in the actual article, and all these ones that we do share today, even so ever so briefly, I will be linking to the actual articles. The other ones that you can go to the website, and we'll have a link to the introduction to the series, where there's a running list that you can find, so you don't have to try to track down what's on my site. But there was a YouTube video that was posted August the 29th, 2012, where Les Brown is sharing the quote, and he doesn't give credit to anyone else. So it's either by him or it's anonymous, but it's not from Lewis.
Very interesting. And that one is a very popular one on the internet. See a lot of memes with that. So how about this one? Be weird, be random, be who you are, because you never know who would love the person you hide.
Ah, yes. Now, is there this makes me think, is there anyone exactly like you or I? Well, of course not. Even if you have a twin sibling, that person is different from you in many ways. But sadly, some people don't feel so unique that they need some quote to help encourage them to remember it. And this is one that if you read Lewis closely, unless there's something in the letters that I've missed, this is totally very different from any kind of style that he would have. Would it be something that he might agree with? This one probably is more questionable. Other ones that I share in the series on my website is like, well, Lewis may agree with this, but he didn't say it, so don't credit it to him. This one, we're not so sure he wouldn't necessarily agree with this. But yeah, I did a search, and it wasn't in the works of Lewis that we have electronic copies of. And then in doing research, and I don't think I've mentioned it yet already, but some people aren't aware that you can, when you do, if you do use the website Google to search, you can go into the options and you can search Google Books. And so doing that, I tracked down that a 2014 book by Melanie Young called Fearless Fabulous You, Lessons on Living Life on Your Terms, says it is a unknown quote. So that was kind of my final authority on that. If there's a recent one that says it's unknown, because, you know, hopefully some authors that I've actually respected, we won't get into them today, list, you know, some Lewis quotes that aren't from him, but you would hope, you know, an author would try to track down. And so in this case, not finding it in Lewis's writings and then having someone say it's anonymous, this one gets stamped anonymous.
So interesting. Now, this next one actually shows up, the correct version of it shows up on the stone in Westminster Abbey in Poets' Corner. And that quote is, I believe in Christ like I believe in the sun, not because I see it, but by it I see everything else.
Right, and this is the version that's not correct. And yeah, this falls into the category, and this is going to be, I believe, my fourth show, where I'll be looking at either almost quotes, to where someone is paraphrasing, or there's some missing or different words, but Lewis said something very, very similar. Or I do have a category called not quite, and that is quotes that are Lewis, but they're isolated to the extent that they could be misunderstood. It could have a different interpretation than what Lewis meant. Or there is one in The Four Loves that I don't believe that we're going to get into, that he's actually, he does write it, but he had been setting up that this is something that he did not agree with. And then people shared that part of the chapter in Four Loves, and it's something Lewis didn't agree with. But here, it's a case to where someone was, trying to, share something from Lewis, and they didn't quite get it exactly right. It sounds good the way it is, but this is the actual way that Lewis wrote it, and it's from Is Theology Poetry, which is an essay from the Weight of Glory essay collection. And it's in Poets' Corner, like you said, and there's a memorial stone in Poets' Corner with it, and it's, quote, I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. Pretty close. We want to be accurate and share what Lewis actually said.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, this next one also, just like the dream, another dream quote, is circulated frequently on the internet. There are far, far better things ahead than any we leave behind. Let's talk about that.
Sure. Well, this quote is one that suffers from two different problems, and let me take them in reverse order. While Lewis wrote something very close to this, very, very close, I believe his meaning suffers when these actual words are shared without their context. So this is the one that I like to call not quite Lewis, because it is something that he did write, but it can be easily misunderstood. The correct quotation, again, is very similar. There's just two words that are not included, and it's as follows, quote, there are better things ahead than any we leave behind, close quote. Again, only two words are left out. So, but, what do you you know, having heard that, unless you've heard the actual context, most people think about, oh, this is encouraging you if you're facing an unfamiliar situation, if you just finished school or you're beginning a new job and so forth. But this is not the context. So even though this is a great saying, because of what it actually means within the context, I discourage people from sharing it. It's found in a letter dated June 17, 1963, and it's available in the third volume of the Collected Letters from Lewis. He is writing it to a lady that he's trying to encourage, who is possibly dying. She actually went on to live 12 more years, but Lewis, ironically, died 5 months later. And so, you know, that's not the reason why I don't want people to share this quote, but, you know, we're concerned about, you know, things being misunderstood. So truth matters. And so some expressions just don't stand well alone. So we want to encourage people to be slow to share things they see online, but be quick to read the author's actual words in their original context.
Very good. And thank you for that. That clarification. It's very interesting thinking about him writing it shortly before his death, because he really did have better things ahead for him, you know, his home in heaven, the things he'd been writing about for many years. So very interesting to put it in context. So how about this one for the last one? The homemaker has the ultimate career. All other careers exist for one purpose only, and that is to support the ultimate career. So what about this quote?
Well, in this case, this is a almost quote, but not in the same spirit of the other one we were talking about earlier. And that is, Lewis has said something similar, and this is sometimes shared, but it actually leaves some words out. So the homemaker, ultimate career, Lewis never said, but we do know from a letter to Mrs. Johnson from March the 16th, 1955, that is in the third volume of the Collected Letters, a condensed version of what he said is as follows, and I'm going to go dot, dot, dot to note that there's some missing words here. So, quote, a housewife's work, dot, 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 is surely in reality the most important work in the world, dot, dot, dot. Your job is the one for which all others exist, close quote. So someone maybe saw this, because, again, that is leaving out some things. In fact, on the show where we actually deal with it, I'll probably share the full paragraph, because it is a full paragraph. It's not just one sentence where Lewis has those words, but there's some other words he says in between. It doesn't change the meaning all that much. So in this case, you know, sharing the corrected short version of what Lewis said is not so bad. But the other one is anonymous at this point, as far as I know. I haven't tracked it down to anyone in particular. It was probably something that, a lot of people probably have thought this idea, and it was one of those things that was out there. People thought, oh, Lewis said something similar, and someone was decided to post it and attribute it to Lewis, but it's not something that Lewis said.
So there you go. As William has mentioned, he has over 30 quotes that he has checked and referenced that will be available. Some of them are available on the site. They will be featured in forthcoming podcasts. So make sure to stick around for every post that comes in this series, because you'll learn exactly what these quotes mean and in the context that Lewis intended them to be. So the next section we're going to talk about very briefly is misconceptions. This will be the fifth and sixth episodes of the podcast. So let's talk a little bit about these misconceptions. So let's just jump right in. Mrs. Moore. So the assumption, Mrs. Moore, who was a divorced mother of two, whose son fought alongside Lewis in World War I, lived with Lewis pretty much for the rest of his life. And there's an ongoing debate about whether or not they had an affair. So what do you think about that?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, people who are famous are subject to rumor and gossip, even if they're Christians. And then when a well-known individual like C.S. Lewis doesn't clarify things before he dies, then it leaves it up to speculation. So some people may not be familiar at all with who Mrs. Moore is, and you gave a good brief summary there a second ago. So it is true that Lewis knew Mrs. Moore and lived with her for almost the 30-year time that he knew her. Now, there was quite a bit of an age gap. She was over 40 years old when he met her, and he was not yet 20. And their relationship began sometime in, like, June 1917 and only ended when she died in 1951. Her full name, in case people aren't aware, is Janie King Askins Moore. And she was the mother of a friend called Patty Moore, who was the roommate at Keble College, Oxford, where they were both cadets training for World War I. And so they made an agreement, from what we understand, that if one of them died, that the other would take care of the other's parent. Now, this is somewhat, you know, why would Lewis, you know, say that when, you know, he had an older brother? But, of course, he was in the war as well. But regardless, we do have some good concrete proof that some kind of pact was made. He did die, and Lewis looked up to this lady. She was described, quote, by him as an Irish lady when he was actually writing a letter to his father. And then, you know, from the letters, which there are, you know, quite a few volumes, there's three volumes of his letters, in this part of his life, he doesn't make a lot of reference to her or things that he says. It doesn't give a lot of details. But anyway, from what we know, though, is, you know, it's unlikely that he had an affair with her. And if he did, it maybe happened prior to the time when he became a Christian. So, you know, when he was a non-Christian, it's a possibility, but we have no concrete proof. So my perspective is it's best not to speculate about it, but I have to talk about it because there is speculation already out there and there's some questions. And in my series that at the time of recording, I just started about the misconceptions, I devote over 1,500 words to this topic. And then Dr. Jerry Root has actually dealt with the topic. He spoke one time and then he has an unpublished paper, and he shared that paper with me, and so I got permission to actually share some of the evidence that he pulls from Lewis's diary that supports that it is very unlikely that he had an affair with Mrs. Moore. So this will be the topic that I'll deal with a little bit more in the fifth episode of the podcast.
So Miss Moore is definitely a hot topic among many scholars, but let's talk about the next one. As you mentioned, some of the misconceptions that we're going to talk about here, one particularly deals with Lewis's time as the president of the Oxford Socratic Club and a debate he had with a woman named Elizabeth Anscombe and how that argument affected and impacted his writing. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, certainly, Crystal, be happy to. Yeah, the claim, as I titled it in an article that I already have on my website has over 1,500 words, is the claim is Lewis had a serious crisis of faith after losing a debate to Anscombe. Well, this debate happened February the 2nd, 1948, and the claim is that he suffered defeat at the Oxford Socratic Club, which he was the president of. And this is one where it's not a debate in a traditional sense. Anscombe came to read a paper where she had a question, or she was questioning a certain aspect of what Lewis wrote in his book, Miracles, a Preliminary Study. And so she read her paper, presented it. Lewis replied. And then there was some back and forth. We do have some very specific knowledge about it because it's summarized at the time, and now there was a reprint back in 2012 of the Socratic Digest. So we'll have a link in the show notes where if people want to get an actual copy of the Socratic Digest. It has the complete paper that Anscombe read. We only have summary of Lewis's reply and then another of her reply, I believe. I don't have that in front of me, so we don't have the full back and forth, but it's not a traditional debate that most people would consider like they think of the presidential type debates or the, you know, political office to where you have candidates go back and forth or is asked one question, both respond and such. It's not a debate in that way, but we do have Lewis, you know, feeling a little like he didn't do very well. I'm not going to actually quote for this introductory episode. I'll be quoting more about what we do know from some letters he wrote or comments he made that is in a book by a friend of his that wrote a biography. George Sayer wrote Jack, A Life of C.S. Lewis. So Lewis made some comments that would seem to support it. Read my article or listen to the other podcast about it. But just to give you a taste of things, Well, one of the important things to note is that for Lewis, he was an excellent debater. He was very much feared in a certain regard, and that is when he stood up, some people that, individuals that were presenting the other side, or maybe there was someone else that was going to be replying, and if they didn't have something, Lewis would stand up. I'm sure that person felt like, oh boy, here it comes, and that they weren't going to be able to really, have any kind of comeback, because Lewis was a great, thorough thinker on a lot of things. But in this case, he did acknowledge, and again, there's an article that talks about it, and I'll talk about it in the actual show, but this is giving a kind of a whirlwind tour of the material to where Lewis did revise the chapter that Anscombe was questioning. But in terms of debate, it's really debatable as to, per se, who won. But it was clear that she did hold her own, so to speak, which is something that Lewis was not used to. And so my perspective on this is that, he wasn't even used to having a totally even exchange. And so so it was at least a dead even heat. There's some other material out there to talk about when the debate was redone later that people thought Lewis won. And so definitely, though, something that I do talk about in the article, and that is, Lewis didn't, lose, he didn't have a serious crisis of faith as a result. There's some claims that, he didn't write any more apologetic works. And he did write differently, but he kind of continued and decided to focus on doing a lot in the 50s. He's more known for the Narnia series now, but he did write other material. And so we explore that in the actual article, and I'll be talking more about that in that fifth show.
Very good. That sounds like very interesting in the... I actually own Joel Heck was the editor of those Oxford Socratic papers, and they're very, if you're interested, it's a very great purchase. So the last misconception that we're going to tackle briefly today in this introduction is the claim that Lewis was a universalist and that he sort of had an open interpretation to many things that are biblical. Now let's talk about that just for a second.
Sure, yeah. We're going to even get less into that as we're wrapping up, because of time and such. And again, this will be in the last podcast, which will also include a summary. So we'll tackle this additional misconception here. I'm really only going to touch on some of the things. The claim is, a universalist, and since I'm not a universalist, I don't claim to know universally all their beliefs. One of the points that I'm actually not clear on at this point, my article hasn't been posted yet at the time we are recording, but I was assuming that a universalist does not believe in hell at all. I did some background research. I'm not sure if that's entirely true or not. But we do know, though, from Lewis, from his other writings, that he definitely did believe in hell. And the claims, though, that one of the first things is has to do with in the Narnia story, The Last Battle, there's a character, Imeth. And so he gets to go to the equivalent of heaven or Narnia heaven. But he did not serve Aslan during his life. When he dies, he has a conversation right after he dies. And so this leads people to believe, Lewis is a universalist. Well, let's stop and look at the rest of The Last Battle. Another controversy, which we're not touching on, but I will be in my series, is that Lewis hated women. And one of the proofs for that is that Lewis must have hated women because one of his characters, Susan, didn't go to Narnia heaven. Well, these two claims kind of fight against each other. How can you have a claim that Lewis was a universalist because of this, and then he would hate a woman because of that, when if both are true, then they, at least one contradicts the other. And so that's something that I'll be tooling out in the article and talking about in the later podcast. Lewis's association, though, with George MacDonald is also something that makes people think that he was a universalist. From what I've read about George MacDonald, not an expert at all, is that he had some universalist-type beliefs. Lewis didn't, hold those. And then there are some quotes in Mere Christianity that lead to some question about what Lewis actually believed. But you can't say Lewis was a universalist. In the actual podcast, in the article, I'll be sharing some thoughts that is in a book by Donald T. Williams. He has a book that I recently recorded a podcast for, and that should be posted by the time this show is out. And his book is entitled Deeper Magic, Looking at the Theology of Lewis. So he does a very good job with this, and others have also touched on this as well, but I'll be sharing some of the thoughts from that to say that Lewis was definitely not a universalist.
Well, George MacDonald definitely had an imaginative impact and to an extent a theological impact on Lewis, but I wouldn't dare say that it would that he would mimic his full theology or agree with his full set of beliefs. But it's very interesting, and I believe MacDonald is really responsible for awakening the imagination, baptizing his imagination, as he says in Surprised by Joy. So this is going to be a very interesting podcast. I think it's shaping up to be intriguing and informative and definitely entertaining.
Well, thank you, Crystal. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you being the host for today to let me share these thoughts. Let me not forget to mention that this episode is sponsored by Shelley & Son Books. You can find Shelley & Son Books online at shelleyandsonbooks.com. They specialize in rare books by Lewis, Tolkien, and the Inklings, and Friends. You can order by their website, phone, or email. They accept a variety of payments, and you can browse and search their catalog online. Again, find them online at shelleyandsonbooks.com. And before we go, let me have you share a little bit about yourself, and then I'll be back to wrap up things afterwards. So give us some more detail about yourself. What are some things that you have had on your website, as well as mention again the material you've had published?
Sure. My website is my name. It's Crystal Hurd, CrystalHurd.com. And on there, I do various article series. Several years ago, I did Lewis and Women, which William so generously did a four-part series on that. And I also have one on Young Lewis, which explores basically pre-conversion Lewis and some of the themes and individuals in his life at that time, including his mother and father, which is one of the things I'm currently working on now. I'm working on a book on Lewis and leadership, which was my dissertation, but a modified version. And I'm also working on a book on Albert Lewis, C.S. Lewis's father, who was a very popular attorney, police court solicitor in Belfast, Northern Ireland. So a lot of things percolating. But William, thank you so much for allowing me to interview you as part of this series. It's been an absolute pleasure.
As you might be able to tell, I'm recording this ending later than the actual show. That's for various reasons. But it does allow me to acknowledge that my original goal of having these shows in the 20 to 25 minute range clearly didn't happen for this debut episode. So I'm sort of apologizing for the nearly 40 minute program, but I do hope that what was shared sparked your interest in wanting to learn more. As noted, there are too many questionable quotations out there to cover all of them in this podcast series, unless, as I joked at the beginning of this one, that it was at least 2 hours. Even with that, many details like what Lewis said related to the topic mentioned by the quote would have to be dropped. Fortunately, with the upcoming shows dealing with the quotes that were previewed today, I will usually share genuine Lewis quotes from his writings to let you know of a few of the closest things he said on a given issue. If you found this show later than it was released in August of 2017, then you can go over to EssentialCSLewis.com, my website, to hear the next episode. Otherwise, the second show will post about a week from the date this one was released. My show notes for this program will give you links to the articles that are presently posted on the material that was covered. You can also get those notes at EssentialCSLewis.com and look for this debut show on Lewis misquotes and misconceptions. But it actually might be easier to locate the show where the audio files are hosted at allaboutjack.podbean.com. Again, that's allaboutjack.podbean.com. You can also find this show on iTunes. There's a link in the show notes if you don't know how to locate it there. Also in those show notes, you will find a link to learn more about my enhanced study guide to the Screwtape Letters that is called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell. You can also learn more about it by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page PDF sample of my book. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com. Purchasing the book is a great way to support this free podcast. Additionally, I plan to update the notes when details are available about a book version of this material. And again, thank you for listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty.